Welcome to the How to Survive a Horror Movie podcast, where we learn how to survive horror movies and maybe learn how to survive prom. I'm your host, Ryan Stacey, and although we are covering a movie about prom, our prom night correspondent, Josh Wessler, is not here this time. Instead, we have our Carrie correspondent, Jordan Ryan, back on the podcast. Jordan, how are you doing?
I feel like I either sniped or saved Josh from this, because if I hadn't reserved Carrie, I feel like you would have squarely put this on him as the prom correspondent.
I think so.
So, Josh, today, I'm sorry, but for the rest of the series, maybe you're welcome. I don't know. This is the only one I've seen.
Yeah, you, like, percentage-wise, you saved him. You know,
he missed out on one good movie and potentially three bad ones. Again, I've not seen them. I don't want to throw stones before I see the movies.
Yeah, Carrie 2 isn't great, but it's like mildly entertaining.
Yeah,
and the two remakes are worthless, basically.
Fair enough.
Yeah, there's not much good to them. They're just, they exist.
Okay.
They're fine, but why would you watch them when you watch the original?
Agree, especially when the original is a masterpiece of cinema that has no flaws.
Okay. So, yes, we're talking about Carrie today. And Jordan Ryan says this is a perfect movie.
This is one of my top five horror movies of all time.
I respect that. I think it is a great movie. I get nauseous when I watch the spinning shot in prom.
Okay, there's one shot you don't like. Does that make it? Does that detract from the perfection of the rest of it?
Yes.
I don't think so.
I think by default, yes. Like, by definition, yes, it has to. But yes, we're talking about Carrie from 1976, a classic horror movie. If you haven't seen it, go check this one out. This is like must watch.
Absolutely.
Just an absolute classic. So Josh, I'm talking to you specifically, go watch this.
Has Josh not seen Carrie?
I doubt it.
Fair enough.
Knowing Josh. Josh hasn't seen anything.
He's seen the, 2013 with Chloe Grace Moretz?
Probably.
That's the one he's seen.
He probably saw that one, but I finally twisted his arm to watch Ghostbusters and Psycho.
Okay.
This last year, just because we covered him on the podcast, right. And he finally watched them.
I feel like Psycho's, even though Ghostbusters is my favorite movie, I feel like Psycho's the bigger kind of tentpole right there, like... That's the one you need to see first.
That's a good one. That's a tough one. I might go Ghostbusters.
Fair enough.
I might, but those are two just great movies.
Fair.
But speaking of great movies.
Yes, Carrie.
So obviously you've seen this a bunch of times. You love this movie.
I've seen it a bunch of times. I love this movie. It's the only Stephen King book I've read. I mean, yeah, I could talk for hours just on everything I love about this movie.
This is like the second time I've seen it. I've read the book. It's great.
Only the second time.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay. Yep. I end up watching it at least once a year,
Okay. And
it's not a case of like, oh, I've got to get my yearly rewatch of Carrie, and it's just, I love this movie, and especially if I need something to do in the background,
mm-hmm.
I like to put on things that I know and that I like, so at least one time a year, it'll end up like, oh, I'm working, I'll throw Carrie on.
There you
great
go.
Movie.
It's a great choice.
Yeah.
I love this movie. Again, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. Because the point of this podcast is we are trying to create a master list of rules to survive any and all horror movies, even if the horror movie doesn't happen until the very end of the movie.
But when it happens, boy, does it fucking happen.
So we're going to go through the plot of Carrie beat by beat, decision by decision, even though we can't cut a yada yada.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of yada yada until the last 20, 30 minutes.
Yep. So spoiler alert for Carrie. If you've not seen Carrie, go check it out.
Definitely.
Spoiler alert, I implore you to watch this movie.
I feel like... It's interesting because we're going to be spoiling it, obviously, but I feel like everyone knows the twist or the spoil of Carrie.
Yeah, I just don't know if people know how we get there or what happens after.
Exactly.
Because the bucket of blood scene, that's the one everyone knows.
The black prom, as Stephen King calls it.
That's not really the third act of the movie. That's the second act. That's the end of the second act.
It's the climax of the second act, and then the third act is entirely kind of the decline from that.
And... You know, the big moment is definitely the bucket of blood, but yeah, I think a lot of people don't know the prom is not the climax of the movie. So, yeah, go watch it. Spoiler alert. 3, 2, 1. Get out of here. Anything else before we jump into Carrie?
Let's fucking dive in.
All right. So, Carrie takes place in a high school.
Yes. Chamberlain, Maine is where it takes place, specifically.
Wait, are you saying Stephen King's story takes place in Maine?
Yeah, funny enough.
And we are introduced to Carrie White, the titular Carrie. She's played by Sissy Spacek. Did she win the Academy Award for this performance, or did she get nominated?
I don't think so. I'm going to look it up.
No, she was nominated.
Okay, Sissy Spacek nominated for Carrie. Well-deserved.
And then Piper Laurie, who we'll talk about later, she plays Carrie's mother, Margaret White, was nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
Okay, didn't win.
Did not win. But both great nominations.
Great nominations, almost as good as our Scream Queen, Jamie Lee Curtis, having only gotten her first Oscar days before we recorded this podcast.
Yeah, 2 days ago was the Oscars.
Yep.
So Carrie White, she's kind of a loser and outcast.
Yeah. I put it this way. The book describes Carrie as being very ugly, homely, overweight, covered in pimples. Sissy is not that at all. But she is very quiet and very plain. Mousy's a great word. And it works. It really portrays this meek woman who's just been victimized and abused her entire life by everybody she's ever met. And she's walking on eggshells. I'd read earlier in preparation for the podcast, Sissy Spacek did a lot of research and method acting to get in the head of Carrie for this. She specifically looked at people getting stoned in kind of the Dark Ages and tried to emulate that both at the beginning and the end of a scene to just kind of show that meekness.
Yeah.
I promise I won't derail us with constant anecdotes about the production of Carrie.
There's so much about this movie.
There is.
It's really interesting. It's really interesting production. But yeah, so she's been abused her entire life by her fanatically religious mother. We'll get more into her later.
Yep.
But just religious abuse at home, physical, and all the kids pick on her.
Yep.
And it's nasty, nasty stuff. You know, Stephen King, famous for, you know, some of the most horrific monsters in cinema, Pennywise. And here, the big monster really is just teenage girl.
And that's something I feel like we talked about this earlier, and I feel like we should say it up front. You know, you might think on the outside looking in, like, oh, okay, Carrie's the monster here. She's the one who kills everyone. She's the title of the movie. She's the titular monster, like a Jason or a Freddy. Absolutely not. At least not in this movie. Carrie is a victim.
Yep, Carrie's absolutely a victim who goes insane.
Yes, she finally has enough and snaps. And, you know, in my opinion, Carrie did nothing wrong.
Yeah, entirely sympathetic. Entirely sympathetic character. Yeah, you just feel so bad for Carrie throughout this entire movie. It's just tragic what happens. So during, after gym class, they're in the locker room, and she's showering, and she gets her first period. And this is why we need sex education in public schools, people.
Yes. Because
Carrie's mother did not tell her what this is.
A note to, I think we determined that everyone is 17 or 18.
Yeah.
They're seniors in high school in this movie. That's one hell of a delayed puberty.
Yeah. Supernatural magic bullshit.
Yeah, it's supernatural magic bullshit and a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
Shit happens.
Shit happens. But so she's bleeding from the genitals and thinks she's dying.
Mm-hmm.
Fair. If no one like told you that's the thing that happens.
Yeah, no, she's... And she's horrified.
Yeah.
The entire time she's in they're in the shower post gym class. And she's just washing up, and then that's when she starts bleeding, and she tries screaming and begging for help, which prompts everyone else in the locker room to make fun of her and throw tampons at her, screaming, "Plug it up!"
It's so bad.
It's tough to watch.
It really is tough to watch. So we're introduced to, there's like three main teenage girls besides Carrie that are important in the movie. First is one of our main antagonists, a girl named Chris Hargensen, who's just the nasty, mean girl type, really rich, really entitled. And then we have Sue Snell, who's normally, especially in the book, they really make a point. Like, she's always been like the smart, nice girl. Like, she's one of the popular girls,
but she's
the nice, smart one. And for whatever reason, this one time, she joined in on the bullying.
I'll chalk it up to mob mentality.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a kind of absurd premise to these girls who probably hit puberty at a very normal age that Carrie wouldn't understand what her period is. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I feel like it was, just watching that, it felt like it was easy to get swept up in the moment.
Yeah.
And that's all that happened. You can kind of see it when Miss Collins, who we'll talk about in a moment, approaches her and is like, what are you doing? And she's, you kind of see the gears turn like, no, it's funny, right?
Right? Yeah.
So.
And a big plot point in this movie is Sue feels horrible for what she did.
That's the entire driving force.
And she wants to atone for it. And that is the main driving force of this movie, is Sue trying to make up for what she did. And the third one is Norma, who's just kind of Chris's lackey.
Yeah.
Played by PJ Souls, previously seen in Halloween. She's Linda in Halloween. Love PJ Souls. She's always great.
One of my first crushes alongside Laurie and Nancy from Halloween and Nightmare. Classic. Specifically.
So those are the main teenage girls. And so then Miss Collins, the gym teacher, comes in and breaks it all up. It's like, what the hell is happening? Carrie's hysterical, so she full on slaps Carrie.
Yeah.
Not great.
Again, kind of... Miss Collins almost kind of gets swept up in the mob mentality, too, just trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah, it's... Rule number four, don't be a menace, everybody.
This is a masterclass in Don't Be a Menace, and I'm talking about the entire movie.
The entire movie is just Don't Be a Menace. Like, if we don't say it again, it's because we've said it here, and it would just get redundant. This whole movie is Don't Be a Menace.
Also, a bit of the Todd Stacey rule. Be nice. Yeah,
literally. Rule 62, be a nice person. If... these people had been nice, they wouldn't be dead, because almost everyone here is going to die.
Yep.
It's horrible. Yeah, it's not great, and you just feel terrible for Carrie. But that's kind of the thing that starts all this off. Carrie gets sent home from school, and the principal keeps forgetting her name. Principal's such a dick.
I don't like the principal.
He'll like him a lot more in one... I can't remember which remake it is. They make the principal much more likable.
Good.
Which is...
good. No, he's awful here. He's forgetting he's forgetting Carrie's name. He's constantly just kind of trying to brush it off. You know what it felt like? At our... previous job that we used to share.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember this. I broke my ankle on the job.
Yep.
And the only time the GM, who I will not name, ever talked to me was when I came in after the incident to fill out workman's comp paperwork. And he clearly talked to our direct report, who I will also not name, to ask, like, when Jordan comes in, let me know. And it was a short conversation that I had with the GM, but it was a very clear gauge how much legal shit we're in conversation. And that's what the principal feels like right here, that he's gauging, like, how much of a hassle is this going to be for me later?
Sure.
A bit in an aloof way, but that's kind of how I read the scene.
Yeah. There's a moment where Carrie gets frustrated and angry because he keeps forgetting her name.
Calls her Cassie.
Cassie. And Carrie, the thing with her, she has psychokinetic power. She can move stuff with her mind, and she's just, like, figuring this out.
Mm-hmm.
And she causes an ashtray to flip. I love having an ashtray in the principal's office.
Yes.
It's great. It's real quick, and she storms out, and the principal and Miss Collins definitely notice, and like, that was weird. Did she hit it, or what the hell was that? And that was something I was looking for in this movie, is when will people know that Carrie has superpowers, that she's an X-Men, basically.
Yes.
And really, this is, like, besides with her mother, this is the only time I think anyone could have really noticed it. And it was so quick that I can't really fault them for not going with it. So there really isn't much of a hint.
Nope.
One of the best moments in the movie is Carrie's walking home, and this kid, this kid rides by on his bike shouting, "Creepy Carrie, Creepy Carrie." And she just force pushes him off his bike. Hilarious.
Fuck that kid.
Yeah. One of the only survivors of the movie is this kid.
Yeah. And we don't see him again.
Nope.
He got out. I called her Creepy Carrie and I fell off my bike. I'm running.
Yeah. All right. So now we meet Margaret White, Piper Laurie, who I know from Twin Peaks. She's Catherine on Twin Peaks. She's phenomenal. And she is deranged.
Yeah.
Deranged, religious, abusive, insane woman.
I was going to say, I feel like we need to have a preface here before we dive too much into Margaret. She is mentally ill.
Yes.
Her religious fanaticism is to the point of the utmost extremism.
Yeah.
And it's not particularly well shown in the movie, but I know the intent when King was writing it was that she has a mental illness. I believe a lot of people see it as an extreme form of schizophrenia.
Yeah.
But that's something we need to consider when we discuss the rules that Margaret breaks, in that she is insane. It's not a justification, but it is a reasoning. And she's sick. She needs help.
She's sick and she needs help. And it's the 70s.
Yep.
You're not getting much mental help.
Exactly. But she is the most extreme of the extreme religions. She thinks everything is a sin.
Literally everything.
She thinks even marital sex is a sin. It was the first sin, according to the book she reads to Carrie after Carrie comes home.
She thinks she should have killed Carrie the second she was born and killed herself because she had sex.
Yep.
So this is a whole nother level of extreme.
Yeah. So just a preface, as we discuss Margaret, she is sick. Yep. She does need help. And she's almost as tragic as Carrie.
Yep.
But not nearly as sympathetic.
Correct. She literally slaps Carrie and, like, locks her in the closet, Harry Potter style.
Yep.
Yeah, abusive.
Full-on abusive. So, yeah, Carrie gets sent home. She just waits at home for Margaret to get back from her day's work of preaching the Lord.
Yep.
And the school calls right as Margaret gets home. Carrie's thinking she can kind of get away with this, hopefully, because she's terrified because she knows that her mom's going to treat this as she sinned. Yep. She did something wrong. And sure enough, she does. Carrie comes to get comforted by her mother, who shoves her to her knees in a submissive, meek stance.
Yep.
And reads, I don't know if it's scripture. I think it's got to be some other type of religious extreme propaganda.
Text stuff.
But yeah, talking about how the first sin was fornication and the consequence was the curse of blood.
Yep.
And so she thinks that Carrie went out and sinned by having sex, and that is why she's got her period. And Carrie, the whole time, is hysteric. I didn't know, Mama. Why didn't you tell me? I didn't sin.
Sex ed in public schools.
Yes.
And private schools.
Yes.
Yeah, you need to know this stuff. God damn. My sex ed was embarrassingly bad. I went to Catholic school. It was just bad. There were so many things I didn't know when I got into the real world, and I felt really stupid when I learned this stuff. It's like, they didn't tell me this. So, it's sex ed is important, people. Cut to English class, and the English teacher's kind of a prick to Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
The only person who kind of like stands up for all is Sue Snell's boyfriend, a guy named Tommy Ross, who's kind of the all-around, all-American jock.
He's
a nice guy.
He's a nice kid, got his Farrah Fawcett hair, he's a little aloof, but he's ultimately kind-hearted.
Yes,
and, he's kind. Yeah, he wrote a poem for English class that the teacher is reading and doting on. Carrie says it's beautiful, but he asked for criticism. So instead of being the professional adult in the room, he chastises her.
Yep.
And Tommy's the only one to speak up and be like, no.
He mutters something under his breath.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, he tells the teacher, you suck. But he's like, oh, no, I said, aw, shucks. I like Tommy a lot.
Tommy is maybe the most likable character outside of Carrie.
Yeah, really, really great performance. Who plays him? William Catt does a great job as Tommy. Anyway, so Miss Collins wants to ban all the girls who bullied Carrie from prom, but she's not allowed to do that. Instead, they get a week's worth of detention with her. So that means it's like gym class style detention where you're just working out.
It's a boot camp.
It's a boot camp.
Which is not super abusive, but I do feel the need to point out in the conversation that leads up to this, it's clear Collins is reveling in kind of the almost mental abuse of torturing these kids, like, oh, I could take your prom away. It's what I want to do. You all suck. She's reveling in telling these children off. I get it. They did a horrible thing.
Yep.
They were beyond horrible to Carrie. But it feels every time Miss Collins deals with a student who's not Carrie, it almost feels like she enjoys being the mean teacher too much.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe there's something like, hey, maybe she was bullied and she's getting back at them.
It could be.
It totally could be.
We don't know, but it could be.
And it's really interesting because, like, as I'm watching the movie, I'm like, yeah, you get him, Miss Collins. And it's like, but wait, she's a teacher. Should she really be doing it this way? It's really interesting. Really interesting character.
It's also the 70s.
It's also the 70s.
We were literally not born, so we have an outside perspective.
Yes. And the deal is they have to finish the tension because Chris speaks up. It's like, I'm not going to do this. She's like, cool, then you don't get to go to prom.
Mm-hmm. If they don't take the week's detention, they get Miss Collins' solution, which is 3-day suspension and no prom.
Yep. All the other girls are like, no, I got to go to prom. Guess we'll do the detention.
Mm-hmm. And it's boot camp style, but it's really not bad. They're doing push-ups and sit-ups and jumping jacks. Yep. And it's probably not fun to do that for 50 minutes straight, but she's certainly not like hitting the kid. Well, nope. she will hit a kid.
Yeah, she will.
But she's not driving them labor camp style.
Right.
Just making them do general exercising. Again, it almost seems like she takes too much joy in it, but she's not hurting them.
Not until Chris finally has had enough. She's going to refuse to do the workout. Miss Collins is going to just full on slap her, which they really did. That's a real slap they filmed. And all the other girls are, like, terrified, but they also want to go to prom. So they're just like, okay, this is fine. We're not going to back you up, Chris.
Sue has the golden line of the scene as Chris is calling for the students. Like, she can't punish us all. If we all stand up, she won't. She's trying to unionize the kids against Miss Collins. And Sue just tells her, shut up, Chris. It's great.
It's very satisfying. It's very satisfying. And Chris sucks. Chris is a monster. But yeah, Miss Collins, you shouldn't be slapping kids. It's a great way to get fired.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't be a menace. Don't be beating kids. It's not great. Even the ones who might seem to deserve it.
Yeah, just because they had it coming doesn't mean it was your place to give it to them.
Yeah, you can't be hitting people willy-nilly. Chris does leave detention. She is banned from prom. Sue is feeling very guilty about all this, so she asks her boyfriend Tommy, hey, take Carrie to prom, show her a good time, I don't really deserve to go to prom, I want to do something nice for Carrie, will you help me do this? And Tommy eventually is going to agree to do it, because Tommy's a nice dude.
Yeah, he doesn't dislike Carrie. I don't think he thinks much of her, but he's not actively bullying her like everyone else in the school, teachers and faculty included.
Yes.
So to that, that's like, he's treating her like royalty.
Comparatively, yes. Chris's boyfriend is a guy named Billy Nolan, who's played by John Travolta.
In his second feature film role.
And you made comparisons to Grease.
I am of the impression that he would not have gotten the role of Danny Zuko if he didn't do Carrie. Because especially in the beginning, you kind of lose it as the movie goes on. But in the beginning, when he's driving with Chris, there is a lot of Danny in that performance.
Yep.
So I feel like his cover letter for an audition for Grease was just that scene from Carrie.
Yeah, he's a dickbag greaser.
Yep.
You know, I don't want to go full evil greaser that we get into like it. Like, he's not quite as bad as some of the other evil greasers we've seen.
He's going to border it pretty
close.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, he's not, like, the crazy psychotic greaser we get in a lot of these Stephen King movies.
True.
He's just an asshole.
Why are all of Stephen King's bullies so homicidal?
Was Stephen King bullied by a greaser?
I almost think so.
I think so. Stephen King, big fan of the podcast. Were you bullied by a greaser? But yeah, like, so Billy and Chris, they're dating, and Billy is abusive to Chris, just beating her, slapping her, but Chris wants his help getting back at Carrie, so she gives him a blowjob in order for him to help.
While talking about how much she doesn't like Carrie.
Yeah, what a toxic duo.
Yes.
Tommy asks Carrie to prom, and she just runs away.
Understandable.
Yeah, fair.
She has had zero indication that there's any reason anyone in the school would treat her well or even ask her something like that without it being a trap.
Yep. That, fair enough. Run.
Yeah.
Run away. So Carrie's going to tell Miss Collins, like, hey, Tommy asked me to prom. And Miss Collins is like, hey, you know, you're really pretty, Carrie. You should go. This could be really fun. Cut to her chewing out Sue and Tommy. Like, what are you guys up to?
Again, I understand where she's coming from. She seems too excited to be grilling these children and just refuses to accept that they got to be up to something.
To be fair, though, I don't think Sue and to a lesser extent Tommy, because this is really Sue's plan, do a great job of explaining why they're doing this. Which all Sue has to say is like, hey, I did something really shitty. I'm trying to make up for it. Tommy's agreed to help me. We just want to show Carrie a good time. I promise we're not doing anything. Because, Sue, the shoe fits. Like, Miss Collins has every right to be suspicious of you.
Would you say that Sue should have been more careful about what she said and how she said it?
I would, which is rule number 9. and that is unfortunate and will also help a lot of people die.
Mm-hmm.
Big, big failing from Sue here.
Yes, Miss Collins is going to spend the rest of the movie completely suspicious of Sue.
And it's justified.
Yeah.
It really is. So Billy and Chris and a couple of Billy's goons go out to this slaughterhouse and murder a pig.
Yep.
And drain its blood and put it in a bucket.
The bucket of blood is born.
Oh my God. Jeez.
But meanwhile, I think we didn't really talk about Carrie's realizing she has powers.
Yep. Carrie's starting to like learn and read about the fact that she has powers.
Yep. She's practicing a little bit. I bring it up because it's raining as they kill this pig at the slaughterhouse. Hard cut to the White home where, we missed that, went to Carrie's house to ask her to prom again.
Oh,
this
yeah.
This time Carrie says yes.
Yes.
So as Billy and Chris and unnamed rural friend are slaughtering a pig, Carrie and her mother are having a beautiful dinner in the rain at their home, discussing how Carrie's going to go to prom and Margaret will not have it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big argument, which boils over into Carrie finally, for the first time, I think, truly controlling her powers to slam all the doors and windows shut because her mom's getting up mid-argument. To leave, but also, you know, the rain's coming in. I need to close all this. And Carrie says, I'll get them, and just fucking shuts everything. And it's a dominance play from Carrie for the first time we've seen.
Yeah.
Probably the first time in her life.
Probably the first time in her life.
It is great.
And she's like, I'm going to prom.
Yeah.
Like, Tommy asked me. I said yes. I've committed. I'm going. You can't stop me.
And all her mom has to say about it is, witch.
Yeah. So she's now convinced with all the psychokinetic powers that Carrie is a witch. Margaret believes she is in a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
rule number one, we have a witch running around.
Indeed, and the witch is your daughter.
Yikes. Confirming a lot of her fears.
Mm-hmm.
Not good. So Chris and Billy, they sneak into the school gym to get the bucket of blood set up in the gymnasium. And they're going to bring, Chris is going to later bring Norma in on the plan too.
Yeah, they set up the bucket of blood at night, and then the next day, Chris is there to help with the decorating of the gym for prom. And that's when she kind of clues Norma in and gets Norma in on it, which Norma's also kind of spreading the gossip of, did you hear that Tommy Ross is bringing Carrie White to the prom?
Oh my God. Scandalous.
As a tangent, Norma's been wearing this red rainbow hat
the entire movie.
She even wears it later in the prom. I noticed for the first time as we were watching it, she's getting her hair curled at a salon, and on top of the dome thing, she's set the hat on top of it.
Literally always wearing this hat.
It's a tangent that means nothing to the movie, but it's a quirk that I love.
It's really funny. So I was watching, I recently watched The Ginger Dead Man 3.
Okay.
With Josh. We were hanging out, we watched it. And it's a little bit of a Carrie parody.
Okay.
But it takes place at a roller rink. And it's about being the roller rink queen.
Okay.
And there is a girl running around, kind of the toady character, like Norma, who's always wearing the red hat.
That's fucking funny.
Yeah, it was actually a fun movie. It was like super low budget, one of those like Full Moon Pictures movies.
Okay.
But it was fun.
I'm impressed he got Josh to watch a horror movie not for the podcast.
Well, okay, so Josh and I, like one day on Netflix, I get the Netflix DVD still, so I got the movie Evil Bong. And I'm like, Josh, you want to watch Evil Bong with me? He's like, sure. We really enjoyed it. It's actually a fun movie. And so we've been watching, we watched the three Evil Bong movies. The fourth one is a crossover with the Ginger Dead Man.
Oh my God.
Like, I guess we got to watch the Ginger Dead Man movies. We watched the three Ginger Dead Man movies, and now we're finally going to watch the crossover next time.
The fact that Josh potentially hasn't seen Carrie, but has seen the parody of in Ginger Dead Man 3 is astonishing to me.
Ginger Dead Man 3, Saturday Night Cleaver.
Oh my God.
It's like a 70s disco movie. It's fun. It is super okay. It's fun. It's the best of the Ginger Dead Man movies.
I've never seen any of them, but I want to watch this one.
Yeah, you skip the first, you watch the third
one. I will.
Okay, so Margaret tries to talk Carrie out of going to the prom one last time, but Carrie's like, no, I'm going to go. And Margaret's like, all right, I'll see you later, and I'm going to murder you.
Yeah, she quotes one of her scriptures that I don't think are actual scripture.
Yeah.
Talking about how she must not suffer a witch.
Yeah, so she's planning to kill Carrie.
Take the shot, I guess.
If you
Here's the thing. Margaret's in a horror movie, so we have to judge her as if Carrie is a monster, which we know she's not.
Yep. Mental health is important, people.
It is. It is.
So Tommy and Carrie, they're going to go to the dance prom. We get a whole bunch of just kind of like prom bullshit. We're going to yada yada through a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
It's nice.
We
see
Carrie happy for the first time all movie.
Sue's going to show up. She doesn't have a date, but she's like just kind of spying just to make sure Carrie's having a good time.
And Tommy, he's being a perfect gentleman. Yep.
Nice dance.
He picked her up. He made sure she's comfortable as they get in. He doesn't push too hard.
Opens the door for her.
He pushes just enough to get her to come out of her shell, but not being super disrespectful about it, respecting that she, you know, this is new territory for her. He asks her to an after prom thing,
which
she immediately thinks is him trying to ditch her, and she's like, oh, I get it. He's like, no, come with me. And when Miss Collins comes to see how Carrie's doing, he recognizes their need for privacy and that Miss Collins doesn't trust him and politely excuses himself to get them punch.
He kisses her at one point, which is interesting.
Yep.
Was Sue okay with that?
I feel like that's outside the scope of our podcast.
Yep, I don't know. That's between Tommy and Sue.
Exactly. You know what? Sue feels guilty. She might have wanted Carrie to have a full prom experience. And how far Tommy takes that full prom experience, she's not going to ask questions about because she was awful. And she doesn't deserve to get mad about it.
Yep.
But so they get done with the dance, and the prom ballots are all out. And
prom queen.
Yep. And it didn't occur to me that some people might not know what that means.
Yeah, we didn't have that. We had homecoming.
Fair enough.
Prom.
Fair enough. But yeah, no, and right at the bottom of the king and queen ballots are Tommy Ross and Carrie White.
And Tommy does convince Carrie, like, let's just vote for ourselves. Yes. Why not? To the devil with false modesty.
Indeed.
It doesn't matter because Norma's going to sub out a whole bunch of the votes.
Yes, Norma, when they were setting up for prom, Norma approached one of the teachers and like got on like, oh, I want to help.
Yep.
And she specifically wanted to collect the ballots because she is working with Chris to ensure that Carrie wins. One of the things I think of, I wonder if she would have won without the ballot
stuffing. That's a great question.
Because most people at this prom are seeming to treat Carrie like a person for once.
Yep.
And maybe whether it's through some form of penance of we've not been great to her, she deserves her moment, whether it's, oh, well, I'm voting Tommy Ross, I don't care who his date is, right, or whether it's people genuinely wanting to see her win it, I almost feel like they had a solid chance without the ballot stuffing.
Yeah.
But it's a moot point because Chris didn't want to take any chances that Carrie would not be on that stage.
Nope. They stuff the ballot box with fake ones. So Tommy and Carrie are going to win and head up to the stage.
And yeah, watching them walk to the stage is like watching. Funny enough, it's like watching a pig get led to slaughter. Two pigs get led to slaughter
because this is, we're heading to the end here.
Yep. So everyone is excited for Carrie. But as the applause happens and the crowning happens, Sue notices a streamer fall perfectly next to Carrie, and that causes her to look up, and she sees a bucket hanging from the thing and from the rafters, and her eyeline follows the rope down to where she can see Chris and Billy, who snuck into prom and are hiding beneath the stage ready to pull the cord at any moment. So Sue tries to intervene and goes to stop them, and Miss Collins stops her in what I think is one of the worst moves of the movie, and here's why I say that. Sue had the kind of blinder things open when Miss Collins comes to grab her. If Miss Collins wasn't on her warpath against children and would have looked down maybe an inch, she would have noticed two people beneath there up to no good.
Yep, because she notices Sue before Sue gets to the stage. Sue's not dressed in prom clothing, she's just dressed in regular clothing. And so she's like, okay, so Sue's here to do something. This is the part where someone would do something mean. Yep. So I'm going to stop Sue. And she doesn't listen to Sue at all, pointing out, like, look under the stage. And we don't hear any of this. It's all muted. This is just the music, the score at this point. Billy and Chris are under the stage about to do something horrible with a bucket. And Miss Collins doesn't listen at all.
Nope.
So this definitely goes back to the earlier discussion we had with rule number 9, be careful what you say and how you say it. If Sue had made herself look less sus earlier in the movie, maybe Miss Collins would have been more opening to listen here. But yeah, this is not great for Miss Collins.
No, Miss Collins drags Sue out. She throws Sue out, which is actually going to save Sue.
Yep. Sue lives because of Miss Collins.
She's safe because she was nice in that she told Tommy to bring Carrie to prom.
Yep.
But she's wasn't, I don't know. Is, do we count that as a rule, a rule follow where being nice saved her life in a kind of weird roundabout way?
Yeah. She did something nice and tried to intervene, got herself kicked out of prom. So, you know, by trying to be a nice person, she inadvertently got saved.
Yeah. It's a weird, really roundabout way of following that rule, but life finds a way.
Life finds a way, at least for Sue. Nobody else, though.
Yeah. As Sue gets thrown out, doors get shut and locked behind her, Miss Collins, Chris pulls the cord.
Yep, bucket of blood falls, and this is the thing everyone has seen.
Yes.
Bucket of blood falls Sissy all Spacek over Carrie.
Covered in corn syrup, as Billy Loomis pointed out in Scream.
Corn syrup.
covered in red corn syrup.
Yep.
And in shock. And I mentioned this to Ryan during the movie. I believe this is the moment where Carrie White dies.
Yeah, she's gone.
Yes, she is completely snapped. The rest of the movie, she is essentially a husk of a person, which is part of also why I insist Carrie is a victim, not a monster.
Yes, I'm with you.
I believe this is the moment where Carrie White mentally dies and just becomes a husk with telekinetic powers. Everyone's kind of in shock. Norma is trying to get the crowd riled up and laughing. Most people are just looking at her like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's really just Norma, maybe one other person, one of Billy's friends.
Yep. Tommy questions, what the hell? We don't hear it, but we see it. It's very clearly mimed, and the bucket falls and hits him in the head and
maybe kills him?
Probably.
Generally, it's accepted that Tommy in this story dies when the bucket hits him in the head.
Yeah, and I think, he's at the minimum unconscious, which means he can take no steps to escape the gym before what's about to happen. And, even if he could, it's likely nothing would have happened. He would have gotten caught in that crossfire.
Yeah.
But that kind of puts the nail in the coffin, whether his heart stopped or not after that bucket to the head, Tommy is dead.
And, who knows, maybe if Tommy had been alive and conscious, he could have helped Carrie somehow.
Maybe. He's been very nice to her.
Yeah, maybe he could have saved it.
He's been the only good person to her.
Yep, completely.
And, yeah, so Tommy, correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan, he never knew he was in a horror movie. Nope. But by just not being a bad person, he gets away with no rule breaks.
Yeah, it just sucks. Because he did nothing wrong, and this is the classic, you know, a lot of horror movies begin this way. Shitty teens do a prank, someone dies.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's your movie. I'll always know what you did last summer.
Yep.
As the most famous example of this, the third and wonderful movie. I know what you did. I'll always know what you did last summer. Shitty teens do a prank, someone dies. So this is more on Chris and Billy. Don't be a menace.
Yes, again. And they've literally killed someone here.
This prank, so let's say Carrie's not. Yeah. It's like a telekinetic or whatever. You just killed someone.
Yeah.
Potentially. But yeah, Tommy's dead. He's out of the movie. If he's not dead yet, he will be very shortly.
Exactly. Another scene that I think a lot of people would have seen, even if they haven't seen the movie, is the kind of kaleidoscope vision of everyone laughing at Carrie with her mom's insistence. Exactly. And this is Carrie's broken mind.
Yeah.
No one is laughing. The rest of the prom, we kind of see it through Carrie's eyes.
Yeah.
In that everyone thinks it's hysterical. Even Miss Collins
is laughing. Everyone laughing at her.
And yeah, this, I guess it's one of those things where they don't explicitly say it, but it's very easy to read between the lines. This is Carrie's broken psyche.
Yeah.
And snapped. It's going to lead her to, I can use my powers now. You're all going to pay.
Yep. So this is Carrie, school shooter moment.
Yeah, she uses her powers to lock the doors and then controls the fire hose. She also, despite the break in psyche, she shifts all the lights to red because she has a flair for the dramatic.
Yeah, love it. So I actually have a bullet point. I wrote down everything as fast as I could because this is a really – there's a lot going on in this sequence. So I wrote bullet points for everything that I
caught.
I'm
going to mentally follow along and see if I was going to remember it the same way you wrote it down.
And if I miss anything, make sure you let me know.
Will do.
Because I was writing and watching. There's a lot going on. They have multiple shots happening on screen at the same time. It's insane.
Yep.
So Chris and Billy escape before the doors lock.
They do.
Which is key. And they're going to watch from the windows and see all this go down. So Chris and Billy, and shortly everyone else, so they're going to know they're in a horror movie very quickly.
But unfortunately for most of the people inside this gym, it is too late.
It's too late. Because this is when Carrie shuts the doors, locks them. Sue can't get back in. No one else can get out. So Carrie starts the fire hose, the emergency fire hose, and it, you know, levitates and it's just spraying all over the place. And that should be the key. Like, oh God, we have a magical fire hose. What is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And it starts spraying people over the place, including Norma, who gets knocked out. And I guess when they actually filmed it, the hose hit her eardrum.
Yep.
Burst her eardrum. So she just fell over because she had no balance.
Yep. And then it lingers for a little bit. So we can probably assume Norma's drowned here.
I think Norma might get electrocuted or burned later.
Oh, does she?
I think it's good for her. She didn't die from this, but she is knocked out and dies later on. So Norma is going to die. Don't be menace.
Yep.
So there's one student who just tried to stop the hose.
Yeah.
And he just gets slapped.
Well, and he actually makes things worse because he directs it up and it hits the lights, which causes it to spark. That doesn't start the fire, but it's certainly not going to help things later.
You know what? You gotta try. Rule 22 is take the shot. So I respect the attempt to get that off. But yeah, sprays the lights, and this is going to cause electrical sparking and water all over the floor. The English teacher, and the dick principal, they try to grab the microphone to calm things down. There's water everywhere, and they get fried.
Mm-hmm.
Don't touch electrical stuff when there's water over the floor.
Don't go in the water.
Don't go in the water. electricity is bad. Don't mess with electricity.
And don't be a menace.
Yeah.
And actually, I want to point out they should be actively nice.
Yep.
They are faculty at a school. Absolutely. They should be actively nice to these children.
These two should not be teaching.
No. It's one thing to say, you know, students don't need to be nice to each other, but I am of the belief that even when you're dealing with problem children, your default should be nice if you're an instructor at that school. That should be your baseline.
Yep. Then, and I guess I don't know what this is. Miss Collins is going to die next.
Yep.
And is this like a basketball backboard? What is this?
It's like, I almost feel like it was one of the structures for prom.
Okay.
But it collapses. It's a big structure.
Yeah.
I know it's not basketball because it's too small to be a basketball backboard. So I think it was one of the things they built for prom.
Sure.
It collapses and crushes her.
Yeah.
Chris and Billy watch this happen.
Yeah, they're right there and they see Miss Collins just
if you didn't pancaked. Know you're in a horror movie before now, you need to know now and you need to run.
Yep. Rule 11, get out. These two need to be gone.
Get out!
Especially if Kira figures out you're the guys who dropped the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And this starts a fire. So the whole place is burning down. Okay, and Carrie just leaves. She just walks out.
Silently, brokenly.
Yep.
Just walks out. closes the door behind her,
and everyone and else burns to death.
Lets the school become an oven,
and we get 70 plus people dead.
Yep, here. They give it. I know from the kill count that they give an exact number in the sequel. Yep. I don't know what it is off the top of my head.
It's 70 something overall. Yep. You got to minus a few for what's about to happen later. But yeah, it's about 70 or so people who get killed in this fire. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, comparatively low body count, considering in the book she burned down the entire town of Chamberlain.
Yeah, so like hundreds of people.
Her body count is over 400 in the book.
Yeah, absurdly high body count.
Mm-hmm.
But Carrie leaves, and she's walking home. And instead of doing what like a normal person would do and just get the hell out of here, Chris... And to a lesser extent, Billy looks like he's just drunk.
Yeah, they see Carrie walking, and they try to run her down.
Yep.
I want to defend this, actually. Because they know they're in a horror movie. Yep. What is one of our rules?
Take the shot.
And?
Use your car as a weapon.
And they do both.
Yes.
And I think, I get the feeling they have to know Carrie's behind this somehow.
39, use your car as a weapon. They see Carrie doing all this stuff.
Yeah, they, like, even if they can't make a connection of she's psychic, they gotta know Carrie's in control of what happened at the school. I get that they've spent the whole movie trying to torture her. They're not good people.
Nope.
But by the letter of your rules, it's the correct move.
I would say like they were out of the movie and they came back in with this car as fast as they could. Their red Corvette. They didn't have to take on Carrie.
No, but as you mentioned, what happens if Carrie finds out they're the ones who did the blood?
That's true.
They've got a chance to take her out right now.
Yeah, so Carrie...
Again, I am not defending Billy and Chris, but by the letter of your rules, they played it right. This is a classic example of the rule, the letter of the law versus the intent of the law.
Right.
The intent of the law, for them, is wrong, and this doesn't take away from the horrible shit they did already.
Sure.
But it is smart.
I feel like they should have waited a little bit and gathered more information before making this move.
Okay.
Because they clearly saw what happened at the prom.
Yep.
Carrie, they have to know Carrie's got some sort of powers.
Mm-hmm.
You got to wait, because what's going to happen is Chris is going to drive straight at Carrie, and Carrie's just going to like force push him aside, toss the car, and it's going to blow up and kill them both.
Yep.
If they had like waited and gathered information, maybe they could have figured out like, hey, maybe we shouldn't drive a car at her because she could just yeet us across town.
Maybe.
So, you know, rule 42, don't charge ahead.
It's a good one.
And, you know, Billy looks like he's drunk.
Yeah, he probably is.
Chris is driving, so I don't know how much say Billy had in this. And this really felt just like a Chris move, and Billy was just along for the ride. But that's kind of the whole movie in general. It doesn't matter if you're the inciting force or if you're just along for the ride. This is true for Billy, and this is true for all those people at prom. None of you stepped in to stop the bullying.
No.
And yeah, you ended up becoming a casualty in the process because you didn't do anything. You know, silence is violence.
Well said.
Yeah.
We're an anti-bullying podcast.
We're an anti-bullying podcast. You know, you got to step up. You got to do the right thing sometimes. Indeed.
Whether that right thing is getting revenge via telekinetic powers or just fucking saying something.
So yeah, just if you don't do anything, you are complicit.
Yeah.
But yeah, they get yeeted aside and they're dead.
Full dead. A laundry list of menacing activity that they should just not have done.
If we were to like make a dictionary, a picture dictionary of like each of these rules, which I guess I do kind of have on the Twitter account. But if we were to put like characters who like, this is the rule, this is the embodiment of the rule, and Chris is rule number 4.
Yes.
Don't be a menace. So Carrie's going to go home and she's going to take a bath. Get all the blood off of her.
Yes. She does notice as she walks in that the entire house is littered in candles.
Littered in candles. This is such a fire hazard.
It is. And it feels very ritualistic.
Yeah.
Which is on par for Margaret.
This might be a normal Tuesday night.
You're right.
It could be.
Fair enough.
So Margaret, after the bath, Carrie finds her mom and Margaret like embraces her. And starts talking about how, should have killed you and myself earlier, but we'll pray about it now. It'll be okay. And then she just stabs Carrie in the back with a big kitchen knife.
Yep.
Carrie, rule number one, you're finally in a horror movie.
I feel like most of her life has been a horror movie to a smaller extent.
Yep.
But this is the first active threat she's faced.
Margaret is going to kill you unless you do something. Mm-hmm. Like she falls down the stairs.
Yep.
Margaret's coming at her with a knife. It's terrifying. Carrie uses her powers and throws every knife in the house at Margaret and kills her, and it's awesome.
this is where the troubling part comes in, because being mentally ill does not justify you trying to kill your daughter. Nope. But Margaret needed help.
Yep.
And so I don't feel comfortable holding her responsible for most of the movie.
Sure.
It feels really mean-spirited if we do, because she's just as tragic as Carrie.
Yep.
She's not sympathetic, but she's clearly in need of help that she just never received.
Yep. Agreed. But man, it is satisfying seeing Carrie.
It is. This. With that said, listeners, mental health is important, and yep, therapy is fun and cool.
Yep. Go get therapy. Therapy. Everyone should be in therapy. Everyone.
I personally will not disparage anyone's religious beliefs, but if you are to the extent that you think literally everything on earth is a sin, maybe talk to your pastor, and beyond that, talk to a therapist.
Yep. And maybe talk to a different pastor and get a different perspective.
Yep.
Because if your pastor is not helping anything here, you know, maybe talk to a different one. Get some other perspectives.
Yes.
But yes, mental health is important. Therapy is cool. I love that. That might be a rule, but that's just like a good, like,
it's a life rule.
That should be like a motto of the podcast. Therapy is cool.
Therapy is fun and cool.
Remember that, everybody. Therapy is fun and cool, and there's no shame in getting help.
No.
And if more people got help or helped other people get help, stuff like this could have been prevented.
If Margaret would have gotten help, Carrie wouldn't be in this situation. The entire town wouldn't be in this situation.
Yep. But Carrie does successfully kill Margaret, and her powers get out of control, it feels like, at this point.
In this movie, at least, it's been a while since I've read the book, and I've obviously not seen the other adaptations, but her powers are very emotion-centric in this movie, and she's completely overcome right now. She's had a traumatizing night, she's completely broken, and she just killed her own mother. She's overwhelmed, and her powers spiral out of control and start tearing the house down.
Yeah, it's literally collapsing.
Yep.
So she grabs her mother's body and goes to hide in the closet, but the house collapses and kills Carrie.
Yep. Let's give Carrie credit where it's due. She took the shot.
Yep. She took the shot she had to take, ended the horror movie quickly.
Yep.
And, you know, you could say you need to get out of the collapsing house, rule number 11. Mental,
she's broken.
I'm not going to hold that against her at all.
It'd be like yelling at Sally at the end of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Carrie did nothing wrong.
Exactly.
That's where I'm going to land here. And so the movie ends with, like, Sue. She's, like, the only survivor. Mm-hmm. You know, she's at home.
Traumatized.
And she has a dream where she visits Carrie's grave at the house. And, like, Carrie pops out and grabs her, jump scare at the end. But that's not real.
Yeah, that's her broken psyche. Yeah. And I would imagine that comes into play in the sequel. Because, as you pointed out, the actress who plays Sue Snell is in The Rage, Carrie 2.
Yep. Which is, like, 20-something years later.
Yeah, so I would imagine this is going to inform Sue's life and future decisions. And I hope she's a better character in the sequel.
Yes, the 1999's The Rage, Carrie 2. I once heard this described as the most 1999 movie ever made. Is that good or bad?
We're going to find out eventually. Find out.
But that's Carrie. What a movie.
Love this movie.
I don't have any new rules because like the horror movie part is so minimal.
Yeah. It's a slow build.
It's a slow build. And
there's definitely, like, do not, if you listen to this, despite not seeing it and despite our warnings, don't let that discourage you. It's a slower build, but there's definitely atmosphere and character building to get to it.
Yep.
The brutal parts just don't happen until the end. It's still very much an atmosphere of horror the entire time.
Yeah. So let's get into some awards, huh?
Let's.
Which could be tough.
I've got a couple. Yeah.
But yeah, this is not a typical selection for horror movies.
Part of why I selected it, because I like to choose the ones where we have an opportunity to think outside the box.
Don't Breathe.
Indeed.
So, Randy Meeks' Merit Badge, which goes to the character who did the best job at following the rules, of course, based off Randy from Scream.
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a horror movie.
Who are you thinking?
I have three options here. I'm going to start with kind of the white bread option.
Okay.
Tommy Ross.
Okay.
Didn't do anything wrong. Spent most of the movie not in a horror movie.
Correct.
Which could make things difficult. But he was the only person actively nice to Carrie.
Consistently and actively.
Consistently and actively. When Carrie keeps asking, why do you want to take me to prom? Why am I here with you? He never once tries to make her feel bad. Like, it's pity. Sue wanted me to do it. He says, because I wanted to, because you liked my poem.
Rule 62, be a nice person.
Indeed. He very clearly has some type of admiration of Carrie for not liking him just because he's the cool guy or he's a jock. He poured his heart into a poem, and she liked that, and that really resonated with him. Tommy Ross, best character in the movie.
Yeah.
but it's hard because he wasn't in a horror movie.
I want to give him an honorable mention for being a nice person.
Here's my dark horse. All right. Chris Harkinson.
Okay.
Because I told you, by the letter of your law, she knows she's in a horror movie. She sees her opportunity to end it. She tries. By the letter of the rules, much like with the blind man, by the letter of the rules, she played well.
Okay.
But there's someone who played better. Carrie White.
Agreed.
She was in a horror movie most of her life, but an active horror movie for all of 2 minutes before she dispatched the threat. She's not living, but she handled her business quickly despite being a broken mess.
And that's ideal. If you get into a horror movie, you can end it in under 2 minutes.
Exactly.
Cool. I guess the horror movie's over and we're not going to have a movie, but like you're here. Generally, you're still alive.
Yep.
I think it's slam dunk, Carrie.
Absolutely. But I needed to point out the people.
So Carrie White, winner of the Randy Meeks Mirror Badge. I gotta say, I wasn't expecting that coming in.
It hadn't occurred to me. The whole time, I was sort of expecting Sue.
Yeah.
Despite how many times I've seen this, I forget how passive Sue is.
She's very
and passive. How poor her decision-making is in the movie.
Yep. I know she gets more to do in both remakes.
She gets more to do in the book, too. And I think that's why I constantly mistake Sue as someone who actively helps.
Yeah. All right, let's move into Night of the Living Pleb, which goes to the character who did the worst job at following the rules, of course, based on Barbara from Night of the Living Dead.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Stop it. You're ignorant.
They're coming for you, Barbara.
Who are you thinking?
Told you in the movie I've got a dark horse.
Okay, hit me.
That dark horse is the entire town of Chamberlain. Nobody in this town except for Tommy Ross and Carrie White are good people.
Right.
Nobody. And I know, I said, you're not going to accept it because you don't like to give it.
I don't like to
give it to groups, let alone a group as wide as an entire town. Yep. But fuck everyone in this town.
I will sign off on fuck everyone in this town.
I think your two biggest options are Chris Harkinson and Sue Snell.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those are the two. We can't give it to Margaret.
Nope. She is sick and needs help.
Yep.
I think Sue makes less bad decisions and is more overcome with guilt, but her inability to verbalize why she's trying to help Carrie and verbalize like and defend herself in a sense, because there's no reason to think that she's a bully the entire movie or in the entire history leading up to this movie. She gets caught up in mob mentality once, feels guilty about it, tries to make amends, but goes about it in the least communicative way possible.
It's not great.
And leads to the school burning down, her boyfriend dying, Carrie and her mother dying, everyone dying.
Everyone dies.
Whereas Chris, as we've discussed, is a poster child for Don't Be a Menace and just is the worst.
She is the bucket of blood. That this is all, you know, you could say other people could have stopped this, but in the end, Chris caused it.
Yep.
This is 100% on Chris.
We can give a dishonorable mention to Billy, but once again, Billy was the passenger for this.
You know, I'll give a dishonorable mention to Sue, and I want to give a dishonorable mention to all the passengers in this movie who were just passing. So
you're going to give it to Chris.
I think we got to give it to Chris.
Okay.
Just because she causes all this, you know. You make an interesting point with her trying to kill Carrie. And in under different circumstances, I think it would work.
Because we've discussed in previous movies, you don't need to be a nice person to survive the horror movie.
That is true. But she created the horror movie.
Yep.
She started all of it. And this all leads back to her. And, you know, she did use the car as the weapon, but she didn't have to be here doing this fight.
Okay.
That could have been a later thing, you know. If we want to get to the car fight, you know, maybe in like a perfect world at this point, you know, Chris and Billy run for it and Carrie's coming after him, getting revenge. And they're like, oh, God, we're so screwed. We got no choice. We got to run over.
Yeah.
And I think that would have been a little more acceptable.
Okay.
But we don't get that.
Fair.
We just get Chris's crazy-ass face as they're about to run her over.
Can we also give a dishonorable mention to the firemen who passed by Carrie driving to the school? I get it. The school's burning during prom. Bigger issues. But they just completely ignore the teenage girl covered in blood just ambling from the scene of the crime.
I like to think, like, one of the firemen saw that. I'm like, that's a horror movie. Bye. that's bait. Nope. We keep going. We'll stick to the tangible. There's a fire. We'll get that. I'm not dealing with ghost girls covered in blood.
Fair. That's what it looks like. Fair.
All right. So Chris Harkinson is the Night of the Living Pleb, and she is not so living anymore.
Will be interesting to see if she earns it two more times.
Yep, because we have two remakes.
And it'll be interesting to see if Carrie wins two more times as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm... So, you know, next is The Rage Carrie 2, which is a sequel, and that'll be completely its own thing. But then we have two remakes, like the 2002 and 2014 ones.
Yep, 2002 is a made-for-TV movie, much like the It miniseries, but...
Worse.
Worse, still too long, but also not quite as long as the It miniseries. Yep. I don't know, you say it's worse. I haven't seen it. I'm not casting judgment, but I've never heard a good thing said about it.
And then the 2014 one, which is completely forgettable. They're so similar. So we will do those podcasts. Those will be two of the shortest podcasts we ever do because we aren't going to hit every beat again. Mm-hmm. We're just going to talk about the differences and whether or not characters deserve the same awards like Harry and right. Chris. That'll be the focus of the two remakes. Before we get to that, we have 1999's The Rage, Carrie 2, which
indeed.
Is going on the wheel. So here's what's on the wheel today. We have The Rage, Carrie 2, It, Chapter 2, A Quiet Place 2, Tremors 7, Shrieker Island, Child's Play 2019, the remake, Psycho 2, Scream Season 2, Episode 5, Dawn of the Dead, and Chef's Choice.
It's a lot of sequels on that
list. Lot of sequels on there right now. A lot of twos. Jordan, go ahead and spin the wheel. All right, that is It, Chapter 2.
All right.
Okay, that one, that's another one that requires some travel. I have a lot on here that requires some travel. So, yes, okay, so Tremors Shrieker Island was spun last time, and I can't do it because I got to go play with my dad to do that. So that's another one, or Tremors, and now It, Chapter 2, both require travel. So those will happen probably in April. For context, it is March 14th, so those will happen. I'll do them as soon as I can, but those will probably happen in April. We'll just kind of do what we can until there. I like to do the ones we spin as soon as I can, but the ones that require a little more travel, I usually have to push back. So that's just a little transparency peek behind the curtains. These will both happen. It'll just take a little bit longer just because travel stuff.
I vote that you pay your lovely parents a visit early and do a Todd Stacey podcast because he is the best guest. So, I will continue to have a bromance with your dad through this podcast.
Hell yeah.
You will not stop me.
I love it. That one is happening. That one is scheduled for like March 8th or April 8th, like that. Like first or second weekend in like Easter weekend. I'm going to a Red Hot Chili Peppers concert.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I was going to be in town for
say
hey
to Flea for me.
And so I'll be at that concert. And then while I was in town, my dad and I are going to do Tremors Shrieker Island.
There you go. The last of the Tremors. Are you going right into the show after that? Or are you taking a break?
We got to finish the Scream TV show.
Ah, okay.
There's only one TV show.
Only one show at a time. Okay.
Yeah, let's not get insane here.
Fair enough.
Nobody wants more than one TV show slot on the wheel, let's be honest.
Some of us don't even listen to those episodes.
Though you should. Jacob and I have a great time.
You can cut that if you want.
You know, it's the most requested thing we've ever had. I listen to the listeners. You're welcome, everybody. And yeah, sometimes be careful what you wish for. But I will say, the most recent episode we did is the best episode of the show so far.
So once the show is done, are you going to immediately cycle Scream 6 into its spot?
Yeah, that's separate. Scream 6 is his own thing.
Okay.
So that's actually a really good update. Just to give you an insight into the current waiting room. Children of the Corn 11 is still at the top of this list, but it's not the mysterious Children of the Corn 11 anymore. I've seen it. I've seen it in theaters. If you guys haven't been paying attention to that on my Twitter, at HowToHorror, I have seen Children of the Corn 11. It was in theaters. So whenever that comes out on like streaming or DVD, we will do that one. Stay tuned on that. But I think that'll be fairly soon. And once something else goes on off the wheel, Children of the Corn, if it's available, we'll go on. After that is Scream 6, just because Children of the Corn came out first.
Yep.
And then we'll get back to our regularly scheduled waiting room, where the top choice right now is fucking Fear of Clowns with Jake Johnson. Whatever that movie is.
Is Jake Johnson getting killer clowns from outer space and going to become the clown correspondent?
I think they're going to make him do that, because I don't think he likes clowns.
God. I love Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Add it to the list of movies that I love that Ryan won't let me gush over. You've heard why with this Carrie podcast.
Yep.
It's why I was not the Nightmare on Elm Street correspondent. It's why I will not be the Evil Dead correspondent. And it's why I was not the Ghostbusters correspondent. Those of you who listened to the Afterlife podcast, as I have, know that they call out Ghostbusters is my favorite movie of all time.
No, we did. Yeah, we did shout you out on that, didn't we? I forgot.
I complain Ryan doesn't let me come on and talk about some of my favorite movies. You've heard why with Carrie.
And I love having you on.
And to an extent, you heard it with Don't Breathe, because I also love the first Don't Breathe.
That's true. So in the meantime, I don't really know what I'm going to do. Maybe I'll get Nick Eamon up on Zoom, and we'll do like Child's Play or Psycho 2, or maybe I'll have Jacob come back on next week.
And then
week.
When Child's Play's off, Chucky goes into the waiting room for the shows.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. So yeah, I don't really know what's going to be next time, but it'll be fun, whatever it is.
Hell yeah.
Jordan, thanks for being on.
Thank you for letting me come and nerd out about Carrie.
Hell yeah, dude. Happy to have you. Is there anything you want to plug today?
Oh, we'll plug the usual social medias, the Twitter at RyRyMovieGuy and the Letterboxd at RyRy4. That's RyRyIV. I use Roman numerals because I am cool and fun.
Just like Scream 6?
Indeed.
You can follow us on Twitter at HowToHorror and check us out on Letterboxd. I'll be putting in this movie on all the different rankings. Or we'll eventually do a Carrie ranking, but we'll do throw this in on.
Will this be the top of the Jordan Ryan reviewed list?
You know what? Let's take a look right now.
Because I didn't get to do the two good Texas Chainsaw movies.
No, you did not. I'm so sorry.
And I didn't get to do the best Scream movie. I didn't get to do the best. I guess it's my favorite Friday movie, but not yours.
So you're. Of the 15 movies you've covered, this is number 16 tonight. I think Carrie will be number one, because that other one is Freddy's Dead, The Final Night. One of my favorite movies. But I will say Carrie is a better movie. Oh, God, yeah. You had a rough lineup here. Let me just go through this for everybody. Freddy's Dead, Don't Breathe, Texas Chainsaw 3D, the most recent Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning, Texas Chainsaw.
The Beginning!
Don't Breathe 2, Scream 3, Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Remake, Friday the 13th 2, Leprechaun in the Hood, Leprechaun Back to the Hood, Friday the 13th The New Blood, because Carrie, Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw 3, and then Texas Chainsaw 4. What a rough lineup.
This is what happens when you're a fellow horror aficionado. You get suckered into the movies that lesser friendships would cancel Ryan for.
It's true. All right. Well, anything else, man?
Nope, I'm good.
It's been fun. Thanks for coming again.
Thanks for having.
All right, this has been the How to Survive a Horror Movie podcast. Stay safe out there. Grrrr, grrrr.